It's time once again for another episode, much delayed episode of the Film Festival Secrets podcast. I'm here once again with my good friend Charles Judson, who is the artistic director of the Atlanta Film Festival. Hello, Charles.
Hello, hello.
My name is Chris Holland. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the author of Film Festival Secrets and the marketing and operations director for the Atlanta Film Festival. That's a change since our last episode, isn't it?
Yes.
I've heard significantly more participation in the festival these days.
We sucked you in.
Yes. Well, I have to say, well, I won't say that, but I'll say it's a pleasure to be here. it's been a while since I've been on a staff at a festival, so getting back into that routine and having some input on how an event is run is... a nice place to be.
I agree. It's been nice working with you.
Most of the time. Well, thank you. Yeah. So, I know we have had like half a dozen things we wanted to talk about on a podcast, but it felt like all of those things we're never going to get to, so we decided let's just do one. Just get it out there and let that be the seed that makes all the others germinate. And that one topic would be...
It would be the three mistakes short filmmakers make. The three most common mistakes.
And why did this topic come up?
We, a couple of weeks ago, asked filmmakers, past filmmakers who submitted to us and current filmmakers, what are the things they want to know most from film festivals? Usually you submit to a film festival, you do not hear anything from us for quite some time. And so this was... this kind of grew out of some of the questions that were asked, about getting insights from film festival and film festivals and programmers about what things filmmakers can do to have a better shot of getting their films programmed.
Cool. And I know you've been watching quite a few films lately. We're getting into programming season.
Yes. We are already up to 1,400 submissions right now and still got another 2,000 to go. So we're chugging away, burning through films, and so we're seeing a lot of the same mistakes over and over again.
Yes, we call them mistakes. You could call them choices.
They are choices, and there is some truth to the fact that sometimes this will be a choice that will be right for your film. But so far, I would say in general, it's not always the best choice. And maybe that's the way to put it. You really need to make the best choice for your film that makes your film stronger. I would read this as best choices.
So, mistake number one, you put down opening and closing credits.
Yes, this is a mistake that a lot of filmmakers make. First, it's just the opening credits. They're just too long. And the fact that, yeah, I'll be honest, just having opening credits in some ways can be a detriment. One thing is you got to remember that if you're a short filmmaker and you're submitting your film to a festival, you're most likely going to have your film played in another block. A block of other films, other shorts in front of a feature. And the longer your opening credits are, the longer it takes for the audience to get into your film. So opening credits, the fact that having no opening credits and it just gets into the story allows the audience to jump right in. And it's inviting. Credits are kind of distancing. You know, you can do that when you're a, $50 million feature. There's a lot of people you've got to pay homage to. But when somebody is paid a $10 ticket for a film festival to come to a festival screening, or $300 for a pass, opening credits can be a little bit tiring. Also, when you're coming out of one short and into another short, the last thing you want to do is sit through a whole bunch of credits. You just want to get to the next film. And that kind of really ties right into the closing credits because... the longer your closing credits are, once again, the more you're killing the energy for the entire screening. And if you've watched a really great short and the entire audience is laughing, you really want to keep that energy going. And there's nothing that can derail that more for the next short than 3 minutes of credits where the audience, stops laughing and they have time to start thinking again. You really just want to get them to the next short. So credits are just they're just an energy killer. It's also the fact that it's a short. If you have a short that's 15 minutes long, a minute and a half of credit, 90 seconds of credits, you know, that's what, 10% of your film? That's too much of your film to be for credits.
Yeah. I feel like on a feature, credits serve a purpose. You know, you've just, whether this is conscious or not, you've just sat through a bunch of trailers, and those are really high energy, and those have their own thing. And then the trailers on a feature set the tone. They get you settled back into your seat, like it's time to watch a movie. And with a short film, you don't have time for that. You know, you need to get in there and start telling the story right away. So the question you need to ask yourself as a short filmmaker is, how does this credit sequence help me tell my story better? What does it do for my audience that really gets, you know, gets them in the mood to hear my story? And if the answer is not much, and if your credit sequence for your short feels like the credit sequence for a feature, it's probably time to ditch it. But what's the alternative, though, on the end credits? I mean, you've got a bunch of these people who worked on a film. You can't just cut them out. Like, what do you do?
I'll be honest. I think you do. We got to remember, there's two places your film is probably likely going to go, and maybe three if you're a short filmmaker. It's going to either play at a festival, it's going to go online, it's going to go on the DVD. For the online and DVD, put your full credits. But I think you do need to have a festival version, and you just need to make that known up front. I mean, in the world of Hollywood, that's how they do credits. There is a hierarchy, and everybody understands there's kind of an ebb and flow to it. So I think just up front, filmmakers just, you know, have a let everyone know that there's going to be a festival cut. The other thing that you can do, and this is a suggestion that comes from Matt Foster at DragonCon Film Festival, is instead of having scrolling credits, have just title cards and put as many credits on, you know, and a whole lot of credits on there, but use title cards, flash it up for 2 or 3 seconds. You can get through a title with a bunch of credits a lot more quickly that way. But I would say, yes, you may have to cut some people for a festival cut. It, you know, it sucks for a lot of people that worked on it, especially if you're an American filmmaker. This means you probably have a bunch of people on there that donated their time for free. But the reality is, what's more important, that your credit got up on screen or that the film you busted ass on actually gets into a film festival?
So let's talk about mistake number two, which is pacing. Specifically the nature of conflict within the pacing of a short film.
Yeah, I would say that is the one thing for short films that you got to remember, that you only have, at most, on average, most of the films that we're playing at the festival are about 15 minutes. You know, so you've really only got like a 60 seconds, you know, 2 minutes at most to really get that story really going and get people grounded in who the characters are, what the conflicts are, you know, what's going on, and really engage people. Shorts are short, and you can't really have your conflict going halfway through, because by the time you've really got your audience really on the hook, basically the short is over. But actually, you probably at that point, you probably have them bored. So just pacing and really, truly, you know, getting the story started, getting people grounded. You know, with features, you have the luxury and time to kind of build a world and give people a little more ambiguity, you know, be a little more ambiguous. But with shorts, you just really don't have time. And once again, you have to always remember, you're probably going to be playing inside a shorts block. And you just got to remember, that's a lot of information for somebody to keep in their head about what shorts they saw, what they've seen. And, you know, the more you kind of slow down and try to, like, give mood and give an air to your film, the less memorable it actually usually is, as opposed to just getting it straight to the point and really getting somebody engaged on what's happening and what's going on.
Yeah, I think a lot of it also has to do with being very picky about which conflict you choose to show. You know, I'll take as a recent example a film that we just watched together, not in the specifics of it, but let's alter the details for the sake of confidence. This is a movie about a man who quits his job as an ad executive and moves with his brother and his father to the wilds of the Okefenokee Swamp to start a bait shop.
Yeah.
Right? So, small business. These people are you know, obviously they've got internal conflicts, they've got, you know, family, sibling rivalry, all that kind of stuff, but they've also got the conflict of, is this business going to be successful, and is this very harsh environment going to play a part? You know, but this was a 15, 20-minute documentary, and, you know, you just don't have time to get all that conflict going, so you really need to make choices. Is this going to be a movie about the success and failure of the business and touch lightly on the sibling rivalry and the parental responsibility or the parental, you know, if dad has a heart attack in the middle of the film? Like, what is this a movie about? And it's going to hurt to excise those other storylines, but if you don't have enough material to support a feature, then you have to make those choices because the short has to be about one, at most two, you know, storylines about conflict. A lot can be learned from television episodes, which are 22 minutes long and generally have an A plot and a B plot. You know, if you really want to get down to the nitty gritty of like A and B storyline storytelling, watch Phineas and Ferb, which sounds like a ridiculous thing to say. But go to the, I think it's Disney Channel, right? Mm-hmm. Go to the Disney Channel and watch Phineas and Ferb. There's a very strict formula whereby there is an A plot and there is a B plot, and the B plot generally ends up affecting some, you know, some of the way of the A plot resolves. It is a masterclass in short form storytelling that, you know, is both watchable by parents and kids. Can you tell I have small children?
Yes, I can. Yes, we can.
Let's move on to mistake number three.
So, mistake number three, and this one, if anybody's been doing making films for the last 15 years, you've probably seen this show up on multiple blogs from film festival programmers, is starting your film with, like, very routine things that your character's doing. Most common is a character waking up. Like, that's the very first shot. You know, the shot of the clock, the character rolls over, hits the alarm, and gets up, or them brushing their teeth. It occurs so often that it's not that fascinating of an opening.
Clerks,
yes. And that's the main issue, is because you got to remember, your film is not competing on its own merits. It's competing against a bunch of other films. So if five films in a row, and I've actually had this happen, where five films in a row all had characters waking up and starting their day.
Okay, put on your clothes,
brush your teeth, you know,
shave your face.
And letting me know that, you know, it's mundane and it's routine and, like, you know, and it after a while, it just doesn't stand, it doesn't help those films to stand out. And somebody, you know, somebody who takes Ghost of Time to give you a different opening, that's immediately going to jump out at you and grab you. But it's also the fact is, those usually don't really tell me anything about the characters, other than that their day is boring or their job is boring, which most of us have those days. So that's not really that specific of that's information that's not very specific to that character, because it's so universal. And I know for a lot of filmmakers, that's the reason why they do it, because it's so universal. But usually you're better off finding something very specific and using that to kind of represent the universal.
You could communicate that information, that this person has a workaday life, in one shot.
Yes, you could.
Right? Like, you could have them sitting in a cubicle in front of a computer with their, you know, hand under their chin looking bored. And in an office environment, that tells you everything you need to know. That information is communicated. Or you could have them sitting in a traffic jam, right?
Yeah.
Behind the wheel with the tie sort of half undone, and looking bored or stressed or whatever as they try to get to work or home. Like, it doesn't take a 30-second, you know, shower and shave sequence to get that information across. Well, that's our three big mistakes for short filmmakers. But wait.
Yes.
We have one more.
Yes, yes.
We have the twist.
The twist.
And in our case, the twist... of the fourth mistake that filmmakers make is
twists.
Relying on a twist. That's right.
So I think
we're way amused with all ourselves.
Yes, we are. So yeah, I think this is a mistake that a lot of filmmakers make. I will say for comedies, usually twists are not that bad. Twists are kind of the heart of comedy, so it doesn't really impact them as much. But when it comes to documentaries and narrative shorts and others, just having a twist where, you know, if in this, you know, we find out that he's the killer, or, you know, it's a dream, which is the worst one. If you do that one, oh, God help you. Yeah, it just, it's not that much fun. I mean, one thing is you got to remember...
Or the designated driver is the only one who died in the car accident.
Yes. So I think the things you have to remember is, once again, it's a short. And, you know, for every film, one thing is, you know, like Alfred Hitchcock always, and other filmmakers talk about, is how much you want the audience to always be slightly ahead of you as a filmmaker. That, you know, you're dropping clues in, you're making them feel good, you know, and that they're always trying to figure out what happens. And, you know, and if they figure it out, awesome. If they don't, they still feel like you played fair. You know, that you weren't, you know, that you weren't playing tricks on them. Well, back in the day, I explained to a friend, the way I kind of see it is, the camera is God, and you pretend like the camera is God. And if God, as the camera, keeps not showing you things, and then suddenly at the end, you know, at the end, he goes like, surprise, here's this thing. Would you not be mad that this omniscient, omnipresent being was not giving you all the facts you needed to actually enjoy the story?
It's like a Scooby-Doo episode where you don't get all the clues. Yeah. You can't figure out before, you know, Velma does that Farmer Jones was really the Crab Man or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't make it fun. It doesn't make it enjoyable. So, like, twists are just usually a bad idea unless you really have, you know, like The Sixth Sense or something else really laid the groundwork so that if somebody rewatches that short, it's awesome. But you got to remember, for shorts, there's a good chance no one's going to watch your short twice. They're probably going to watch your short once. And so you really want to make it memorable that very first time and leave your audience with warm and fuzzy so that they want to see it again if they want to, you know, if you're lucky enough to have that type of short where somebody still remembers it, you know, a couple of months later and they're like, I got to find that short. But yeah, for features you have time to set that up, but for shorts, generally twists just don't work usually.
All right. Well, I think we've covered it. Let's keep this short and simple, like shorts should be.
Yes.
This episode is sponsored in part by the Atlanta Film Festival, the people that keep food on our tables.
Yes.
And that would be us, actually. but I do want to mention that our deadlines are coming up. The regular deadline for short and feature films is when, Charles?
It is October 4th is our regular deadline.
And there's another deadline in there, too, right?
There is our screenplay competition, which is the week before. So that would be September 27th is our regular deadline.
Talk a little bit about the screenplay competition.
So this is our sixth year of doing our screenplay competition. What it is we have filmmakers, screenwriters submit. We pare that down to about 12 to 15 finalists. From those finalists, we pare those down to three winners who we fly out, or at least put up for a weekend retreat at the festival, and that we pair them with three mentors, and they get to workshop their scripts. You know, so like this year we had Jamie Babbitt, who did But I'm a Cheerleader and Itty Bitty Titty Committee, but she's also, for the last couple of years...
It would be a podcast if our phone didn't ring.
Yes, it's awesome. Yeah, so it's a screenplay competition. We fly in three winners for a retreat at the festival. It's a two-day retreat for the retreat part itself. The winners get also all-access passes to the festival, so they get to attend screenings. They get to go to the closing night film. They also are included in part of our award ceremonies and recognized. And they have an opportunity to network with people like Jamie Babb, But I'm a Cheerleader, and Carrie Dornetta, who's working on South Park, and James Ponsolt, who's here for our closing night film, The Spectacular Now, to get not only insights on their screenplays, but also a chance to talk with industry professionals who can give them the dirt and the skinny on what it's like to be a working professional in Hollywood and in L.A. and New York, and get some ideas about how to get their own projects projects off the ground.
All right. Thanks, Charles. We're going to try and do this pretty regularly, so hopefully we'll be talking next week, maybe the week after that, and we'll come up with something extra fascinating to talk about. Visit filmfestivalsecrets.com for more on all things film festival-y, and visit AtlantaFilmFestival.com to learn more about our festival. Thanks.